What's going on, fellas? This is another episode of the Forfeit Fatherhood Podcast, a podcast for fathers by fathers, where we talk about the four pillars of fatherhood, which are faith, family, finance, and fitness. And I have a guest with me today. My guest is Rob Rhodes. Rob is the single father coach. Rob is actually the driving force behind the business of being a dad podcast. Rob is the driving force behind the business of dad. Rob is the driving force behind the business of dad, a transformative podcast for growth-minded fathers who aspire to be extraordinary. Drawing on his 25 years of experience in pediatric healthcare and the MS in management and leadership, Rob, a single father of five, single father of five daughters who tragically lost their mom to suicide, overcame profound personal challenges to become a coach for single fathers. As a visionary behind the Single Father Mastery Coaching Program, Rob shares his profound insights on fatherhood, leadership, and legacy. Through his transformative journey, he developed a practical framework to help single fathers overcome challenges, gain clarity, and build life-changing relationships with their kids. Guys, I know there's a lot in this podcast that you guys are going to pick up. Hopefully you take notes or you can go back to it later on and listen again for the things that are super impactful to you. I'm always excited to have a guest like this. And without further ado, let's jump into the pod.
Don't move. Keep it locked. You already know. You're listening to the Forfeit Fatherhood Podcast. We're having conversations with dope dads covering the four pillars of fatherhood. We call it the Fit Fatherhood Formula. Faith, family, finance, and fitness. That's right. These dads are setting the pace in business and fatherhood. This show isn't only about the outside success. We're getting down to who you are. Gentlemen, it's time to get fit. And now, let's get into the show. Let's get into the show. Let's get into the show.
All right. Welcome back to the Forfeit Fatherhood Podcast, a podcast for fathers by fathers, where we talk about the four pillars of fatherhood, which are faith, family, finance, and fitness. And again, I've got a guest with me today, so you guys don't have to just hear me talk about stuff. You get to hear somebody else's experience. And as always, I think these guest episodes. I know. The podcast was just starting to get good to you, but I've got something incredible that I want to share with you. And it's not just a program, it's a journey. It's the Present Provider Bootcamp. Now picture this: engaging video sessions, practical worksheets, and a community that's led by yours truly. It's a roadmap to excel in both your career and your family life. If you're ready to redefine your work-life balance, head on over to www.forfeitfatherhood.com. and join the Present Provider Bootcamp today. Let's thrive together, dads. It's always kind of provide another level of information because it's coming from someone else's experience and not just stuff that I've researched. So I'm excited to have him on. My guest today is Rob Rhodes, the single father coach. Rob, just tell us a little bit about yourself.
Hi, Rod. Thank you for having me, first of all. I'm excited.
What's up, fellas? Hey, are you ready to supercharge your journey to becoming the best version of yourself? Introducing the Fatherhood Roadmap, the ultimate guide for every man. Uncover the secrets of success and 10 must-do principles. Focus your energy, guard your time, train your mind and body, think for yourself, curate your friends and environment, keep your promises, stay cheerful and constructive, and upgrade the world. Now, I know you're not going to remember all of those, and that's why it's in the book. You got to go ahead and grab it. Elevate your game, redefine your path, and embrace the power of positive change. You ready for the roadmap to greatness? Head over to www.forfeitfatherhood.com and grab your copy today.
Good to be here. So my name is Rob Rhodes, and I am a single father coach. And, you know, like so many of us, I guess there is a personal story behind how we got here. But just to tell you a little bit about myself, I am a single father and I am a single father of five daughters. And, I am now actually a solo father of those five daughters. And so that is kind of my family situation. My background is that I have spent over 25 years working in healthcare, and I have worked as a respiratory therapist at children's hospitals and done some flight respiratory, some flight medical care, and some bedside care, and some management and leadership. And I just recently, retired from that, and I'm now working full time within my coaching and course creation business. And so my business is called The Business of Being Dad, and it also is under my name, Rob Rohde. And really, I provide resources and tools to help other single fathers, all fathers, but especially single fathers, just establish some solid, healthy boundaries to really build life-changing, meaningful relationships with their kids. And we're really striving after creating a legacy that extends beyond your career and your bank account. So that's what I do, and that's what we're chasing after. And again, it's good to be here.
Yeah, it's good to have you, man. It's always nice. Like I said, we have guests on because everyone has these different experiences. And I think it's one of the things that we miss out on as maybe even as just as men is we don't share with each other enough of the like below surface level stuff, right? Like just fatherhood in general is there's a whole lot there. And I can imagine as a single father, there's even more, right? And that probably for a lot of guys is like this whole lone wolf mentality of I can take care of it and I can do it all on my own, even more so kind of take on that persona because I'm really doing it all on my own. But I know that guys are probably having tons of questions and guys that are reaching out looking for help. I'm familiar with the struggles of a father, but a single father, what are some of maybe the unique struggles that come along with that?
Well, I think some of the unique struggles some of the struggles are going to be the same, right? I mean, there are going to be the struggles with identity and where you really receive your value from and where you tend to find your sense of purpose. And you know, you talked about work-life harmony and work-life balance. And, you know, that's a huge struggle for all dads. But I will say for single fathers stepping into that place where they move from being a co-parent to a solo parent during that period of time when the kids are with them in most situations. And so I think there is that challenge of trying to balance, I'm going to say, all domains of your life, not just work and life, but, you know, balancing the social aspect, balancing self-care. And I'll say most single fathers neglect that entirely. And so I think that there's also these feelings of loneliness and isolation that might be unique. Excuse me. I apologize for that. But I think I think that there are feelings of isolation and loneliness that might be unique to or more pronounced in single fathers. Because you go from having not only this partner that's with you, but you go from having like this group of friends that you've become friends with as a couple. And a lot of those friends kind of disappear and go away once you get a divorce. And you also go from having your kids in your house with you 100% of the time to only half that time. And, you know, you have split weekends and split holidays and all of those situations where you tend to find yourself having a lot more time alone. And as you mentioned, fathers, I will say men in general, tend to struggle. This is a little bit of a stereotype, a little bit of a generalization, but tend to not step into having deep, meaningful relationships with other men and or with other people. And that starts when we're young. And, you know, if I am raising daughters, and but I had stepsons at one point in my journey, and you ask them a question and they're going to give you a one or two word answer. And that's as like 7, 8, 9 year olds, you know, where I ask my daughters a short little question and they'll be talking for 15 minutes, you know, and, and it's just comes, they want to tell you everything going on in their life. And, you know, and so it's kind of just something that we, man, I apologize, but it's something that we have from the beginning. And so I think not having that community of other men to lean on is a big struggle that a lot of dads face early on. And then I think just the last piece is just that kind of feeling of overwhelm with all of the additional responsibilities you have to take on. And so it might be just a matter of, okay, within my house, I was responsible for these duties, and now I have everything. And it's not just that, though. It's things like, how am I going to talk to my daughters about sex? How am I going to talk with my daughters? How am I going to help them with their hair? How am I going to make it okay with other parents of daughters for their kids to come over to our house to hang out with my kids so that they can have a normal family life? And so you just have to kind of learn how to navigate that and how to step into that space and just really kind of take it head on, because that's the only way to get through it.
Yeah, I mean, there's several things you mentioned there that I didn't even think about. Like that last piece is something that me and my wife talk about, because I have two daughters, and like them going to hang out at a friend's house or going to even spend a night. I think at this point they're 11 and 9, and I think they've only spent a night at like family's house, right? Because we are just leery of other people. And so I've tried to create in my house, like, we got all the games, we got a pool, we got trampoline, like we got all the stuff, right? If you guys want to hang out with your friends, they can always come over here, just because, you know, past experiences and knowing kind of what's out there, I'm like, you guys can be safe here as opposed to going over somewhere else. But I never thought about that as usually my wife is here, and it's either both of us. It's never just me by myself, though. Like, the girls don't have their friends over when it's just me by myself. And because I'm cautious of it, just because I don't want people to feel weird about it. But then also, I just from the outside looking in, I don't know if I would let my girls go over and just hang out with somebody who's just their dad is there. And so I never even thought about that, man. But that is definitely something that you have to consider. You mentioned something a little bit earlier, and you kind of made the distinction between a single father and a solo father. What's the difference there?
You mean for myself personally, my story, or?
Well, maybe both. I think you can probably start with your story, and I think that might answer the question for me.
Yeah. So, well, I'll just say that when you are a single father, when you first become a single father, in most situations, it's from a separation or a divorce. And so a lot of the challenges and struggles and the things you're dealing with involved with are related to the newness of the situation and the adapting to the situation. And hopefully this isn't the case, but in a lot of situations it is, and that's the volatility between the two parents, and really trying to create a situation around that and a stable environment around that. And so those are a lot of the challenges you face, and that was my situation. And then, you know, I really struggled with some aspects of that. If I'm being honest, early on, I felt that I was kind of failing in a lot of aspects of that. And I had to really take a look at myself. There were some kind of key moments that happened and a turning point that happened that just kind of caused me to change the way that I was going to view parenting moving forward. And so I started making some progress and some positive steps, and kind of got into my groove, and my ex-wife and I were able to get along and co-parent effectively and provide that for the kids. But then several years later, there was a series of events that took place, kind of horrific events that took place that led to the suicide of the girl's mom. And so at that moment, I went from being that was the distinction I was making, where I kind of transitioned from a single parent to a solo parent. Solo parent without a partner, solo parent without a parenting partner, but also trying to care for and trying to provide emotional support for five girls who had just lost their mom, and try to help support them through the feelings of loss and grief, and everything that goes along with that.
Man, I can't imagine. One, just starting at the beginning, me and my wife do a pretty good job of co-parenting together in the household. And so when I talk to guys who are co-parenting in separate households, I'm like, you guys are amazing that you're able to do it. Even being at odds with that other person, but you're still coming together for a common goal of raising these children. that takes a special kind of person to be able to manage, you know, because when it's in your household, it's different, right? Like I, on a daily basis, I have some control over what happens around here, right? But when we're in two separate households, that adds another layer of difficulty that I don't want to ever experience. So I'm always like giving respect to guys who are able to manage that and manage that effectively. But then to even take it further to have to solo parent, and not only solo parent, but solo parent in because of a loss is something I don't want to imagine for myself. And I can't, kudos to you for being able to get it done and doing it the way that you're doing it. It's like, that's tough. And you got five daughters, right?
I do have five daughters, and you know, that's my favorite subject to talk about. So you can ask me about that all day long. And I, but they are currently ages 14 to 28. And this, okay. The loss of their mom happened about 6 years ago. And so my oldest two daughters, who are twins, they were no longer in the house at that point, but that's still a lot for them to take on as well.
Absolutely.
And then the other three girls were, you know, we're obviously quite a bit younger. So my youngest at that point was about 8 years old. And so, yeah, that was kind of the situation. And, you know, you had mentioned kudos for dealing with that. And I appreciate that, but I have to say that there were so many people that helped out, and there were so many people that kind of stepped up to the plate. I mean, I'm happy to say, this is kind of jumping to the end of the story, but I'm happy to say that the girls are doing really, really well right now. And so am I. We are all really in a good place, but there was a lot of struggles getting there. There's a lot of work getting there. There still are, you know, a lot of counseling appointments, and, you know, there were victims advocate groups early on, and there was a variety of other things that we were involved with, but I am very thankful to the parents of the girl's mom, my in-laws. I'm very thankful to them for always being there for the kids 100% of the time, and to my parents for really playing a key role in that during a part of that time as well. And then there were just some friends, like people stepped up when they kind of heard this situation in a surprising way, because as kind of alluded to, us as men aren't great at necessarily nurturing those relationships and those friendships, and even worse at asking for help, you know, because I felt that I needed to be that pillar of strength and stability for my girls, especially when all of that was going on. And for whatever reason, as wrong as I know that this is now, I felt that part of that was not focusing on myself at all and just focusing on them and their well-being. And, you know, there was a price to pay for that a little bit, and I've addressed that over the years, but initially my entire focus was on them and their stability. And I don't even apologize for that based on the situation, but it would have been a smoother transition if I was also making sure that I was getting the help I needed during that time.
Yeah. Yeah. I was going to ask you about it, but you kind of touched on it a little bit, like the having a support system. And it's one of the things I talk to guys a lot about, is having a community or a support system or a group of people that you can kind of lean on or even bounce ideas off of, or just ask questions. I think we don't have enough of that, but I think it's super necessary. And obviously yours came, you know, because of tragedy. But the importance of having a group of people that would come to your aid and want to help you, is super, super important. And it doesn't have to be because of such dire situations, right? Like you should, fellas, if you're listening, right? You should be cultivating a group of people that are willing to and want to support you. Just like you go to the gym and you got your gym partner that's going to spot you, when you're, you know, lifting some heavier weights. You need somebody that's going to spot you in life. You need somebody that can come in when you're struggling and say, hey, I got your back, or at least tell you there, you know, encourage you, be proud of you. Or they see you doing something maybe you shouldn't be doing. They can, you know, put a little fire under you and say, hey, straighten up, figure this out. Like you know, you're not doing what you said you were going to do. you know, like some type of accountability partner or accountability group. I got two daughters and I have, you know, and my wife is here. I can't imagine having five and like the two run me crazy. Like they got so many different things and activities and stuff they got going on. You know, having five and, you know, being all of it for them is amazing, man. So my question, you're a single father coach. What is it that you do with single fathers?
Yeah, so I have created a program that I call Single Father Mastery. And the purpose of the program is to really kind of walk people. Well, I kind of talked about it at the beginning, is to really kind of help them rebuild their life following a divorce or, you know, at whatever point they are in, to help them kind of identify the areas that they really want to focus on and the areas that they really need to address. And just provide some of what you were just talking about with them, provide that accountability, provide the structure, provide the support. And I think a lot of times people relate a coach as being someone who steps in and is like kind of telling you, okay, I only go to a coach if I'm broken, if I need to be fixed, or I like need someone to kind of raise me from the dead, you know, so to speak, or the death of this relationship or whatever. But really all a coach is someone who has experiences that are different than yours and has the ability to help guide you to where you want to be. You know, you don't have to be this person who's like the best dad in the world to be able to help other dads achieve what it is that they're looking for. And so what I do is I start off with walking them through an initial kind of conversation where we are just talking first of all about the fires that exist in their life. So are there any fires that kind of need to be put out? Any immediate things that need to be addressed? Because the initial goal is to really learn about the father, but also to help them get into a place where they are positioned and set up to be able to walk through and focus on a program that can help take them to where they want to be. But the pieces within the program, without going into all the nitty gritty of it, but there is a key component that is really on helping figure out your values, your vision, your top priorities, and not just on a personal level, but on a family level as a parent, as well as within your career, you know, and I have my business is called The Business of Being Dad, because I really believe that your family could benefit by treating it like a business. And I don't mean that by taking away the emotion or the connective piece, which, by the way, every good business has that as well. But, you know, I just mean that from the standpoint of really putting the same sort of effort into identifying what it is you want your family to stand for, what it is you want to be about, what direction you're heading. And, you know, and then it can even be as simple as taking some time on your calendar that's dedicated to working on those things, whether it's working on yourself so that you can provide that in a better way to your family, or setting aside time on your calendar for your family. And so I just think things like values and vision and purpose and mission apply to a family at least as much as they apply to a business. And so we kind of start by putting that piece together, and then we go from there. And the big focuses after that really are on boundaries, work-life harmony, we'll call it, and then really building not just building relationships with your kids and learning how to have these difficult conversations with them. That's the first part, but then leveling that up to a point where you have life-changing relationships, where as adults, they're with you because they want to be with you. Right? We have 18 years with our kids or less where they're in the house, and we have that time to really kind of make our impact in them. And then after that, it's up to them, right? After that, they're in our lives if they want to be, not because they have to be. And so what are we doing during this time to ensure that we're not just setting them up to be successful in life, but part of that is also kind of setting up our family structure so that they have that support beyond the point when they're small and young. They have it as adults, and it extends to their kids and to your family. So really what I'm chasing after, if I want to put it in one word, it's legacy. It's really like, mm-hmm. what are we doing today to create our legacy for the future?
Yeah, I love that. You know what? I really like the business of being dad, because that I've said before, and the guys who listen to the podcast have heard me say that being the dad in the household is like being the CEO of a company, right? And you and your partner are executive officers. You CEO, CFO, CMO, like whatever it is, right? Like you're in the C-suites. And your family, you're trying to get on board with the vision of the company. Right. Like you're trying to get them to align with all the things that you envision for the company. So my wife and I have actually gone to the extent of making a mission statement for our family. And then we sat down with our girls and we talked it over, and they had some input and kind of talked about what we want our family to be. Like, what are the goals of this family? You know, what are their goals? What are our goals for them? Kind of putting it all together. And we allow them as members of this company to have input on things that are going on to an extent, right? Like the CEO is still going to make the final decision, but we'd like to take a company poll and kind of hear what the employees have to say. But we try to, as much as we can, or as much as makes sense, you know, kind of treat this somewhat like a business, because I think that for my wife, it makes sense to do it that way. And maybe not for everybody's situation, if you're not, you know, if you don't really understand how businesses work and all that kind of stuff. But it is very similar. There's some similarities. Like if you read business books or books on leadership, like it's very, very similar, right? Like you mentioned it too. The emotional piece is there in business too. Like companies that have cult-like followings of their employees that like really love the company and would do everything or anything for it. It's because there's an emotional connection to the business. They're not just going there to get a paycheck. Like they feel like the employees that work there with them is family, because they've created a culture. And these are all the things that you want to do in your household, right? And then you mentioned, you know, the amount of time you have with them. And, you know, my daughter is 11, my oldest, and you said 18. And I'm like, dang, 7 years. I don't have a whole lot of time, man. I got to be impactful and make sure that I'm doing all the stuff that I need to do, so that, you know, when she escalates and she gets out of the house, that, like you said, the legacy continues, right? And she does the things that I did, hopefully, or she thinks about the things that I did with her, and they were good. And so she passes those on to her children. And then hopefully she finds someone who, you know, is like me in ways, all the ways that I'm good, and not like me in all the ways that I'm bad. And they, you know, can continue to move the needle forward for our family. And I think that should be the goal for everyone, right? Like, I think a lot of times we think about legacy and we talk about the things, the stuff, right? Like what kind of things can we leave to our kids? Is it, you know, bank accounts or houses or real estate, which is all great things to leave behind. But I think your legacy is beyond those things. It's the intangibles. It's, you know, the memories. It's the mindset. It's, you know, it may even be some phrases that you say that last forever. Like, you know, hundreds of years from now, you're like, my great grandfather used to say, and it's just because it was so impactful. And I think that, you know, the work that you're doing with especially with single fathers, but really any father, is great, because that is something that is super important, that legacy that we leave, or that that comes beyond us or behind us, is impactful work.
Yeah. Thank you. I appreciate that. And I just want to say real quick, the things that you were mentioning that you're doing, you and your wife are doing with your family, are fantastic. I love that. And I mean, those are the types of things those are the exact types of things that I'm talking about, because, you know, you talked about like the emotional piece between a business and a family. And when you think about it, like, what does every child need really more than anything is probably to be seen, to be heard, to be cared about, to be respected as they are, right? Without having, like, unconditionally how they are. And, you know, there's a difference in the level of that, of course, but what does every employee want? What does every team member want? They want to have a voice. They want to be heard. They want to feel like they are contributing and they are part of the company. And, you know, that's a big piece of what I teach as well is, you know, that is why things like chores and things like what you giving your kids a voice within the vision, that is that piece, is it's allowing mm-hmm. them to connect and feel like they are contributing to the family. And I think that is so huge. I mean, with that connection comes closeness and intimacy that you build, you know, over a period of time. And, you know, the legacy piece is one that, you know, we often think, as you mentioned, in terms of the things or the money or the houses or possessions, but the reality is that it's the littler things, the smaller things, those daily habits that we do, the little thing of just like being present, you know, there for your kids, being available, your child knowing that every night when I get home, you know, if your situation allows this, my father's there. You know, I know he might just be sitting there reading a book or watching a game, but I know that if he needs something, I know that if I need something, he's there. Mm-hmm. He'll stop what he's doing and he'll pay attention to me. That's your legacy. Right. I mean, and then it can be like the traditions that we create and the little things like that. And I really try, like, initially this was just kind of happening without me realizing. And I kind of looked back and said, oh, well, this is actually becoming my legacy. Part of my legacy is trying to create a family culture where we support each other and everybody feels safe and everybody feels secure and everybody feels loved. You know, that I am perfectly fine with that being my entire legacy, if that's if that's all there was. But, you know, I mean, there's other things I'm chasing after as well, but I mean, that's a huge piece of it. And so, you know, I just want to bring that up because we hear the word legacy and we think big things. Mm-hmm. And instead of thinking small things that we can do that are going to lead to big results.
Yeah. And you mentioned it too, that, you know, just knowing that your father is there, that just being present without like really doing anything, just in the room, like I know I can go to him. And just kind of going back to business, some of the companies that people would, you know, I think every year they do like the top companies to work for. And one of the things, you know, that people mention is, like you said, being seen and being heard. They feel like their opinion matters, but they also feel like they could talk to their manager about work things or things that are going on. And as the leader in the household, we're kind of the manager, you know, not middle management necessarily. Like I tell my older daughter, she's middle management, because sometimes I'll relay a message to her that she has to tell her little sister. And so sometimes, so I'm not middle management at all. I'm the manager, but they're also able to come to me and talk to me about, you know, hey, dad, you know, X, Y, and Z happened today. Me and Reese talked about it. And, you know, we had a talk by the water cooler and we didn't really like what was going on. And then, you know, we can address it. We can talk about it. But them knowing that I'm there, even if I'm not like overly in their face about it, they feel that I'm present enough that they can have the conversation with me. And it's not like, you know, let's go talk to mom about it because she's there, right? It's, you know, we can talk about dad. We could talk to it with dad, just like we could talk to it with mom, because he's just as present, maybe differently, right? Because I'm not as soft and cuddly as their mom, but I'm there, right? And so they feel like they can come and talk to me. And that's a really, really important piece. And that for sure is a legacy building piece, because even, you know, as you mentioned, we got the two older daughters. I'm sure they still want to come talk to dad and ask questions of dad, because that's who you've shown them to be, right? And so even though they're older and out of the house, that connection is still there, right? It's not the same as the kids who are in the house because they see you every day. But when it's you know, when it's something that they need dad, they feel comfortable in like reaching out and not trying to have to figure it out on their own or Google it, right? They could just ask dad.
Yeah, for sure. That's that leads me to a story, if you don't mind. I'll just kind of share involving my two oldest girls. So without going back, without telling you the whole thing, just for the sake of time, my relationship with my oldest daughter struggled a lot. Their mom had them before I met her. And then when we mm-hmm. got married, I adopted them. And I'm only mentioning that to say that we've just had a little bit of a difficult relationship. And when their mom and I went through the divorce, as I mentioned, I didn't do things perfectly. I made plenty of mistakes, and they were upset at me. And there were periods where they didn't want to spend time with me early on. And, you know, and they never once said, "You're not our dad," you know, or anything along those lines. But in the back of my head, I was almost kind of thinking that, like, I wonder if they're feeling this way, like, well, mm-hmm. you're not our real dad, you know, sort of a thing. They have never said that. And I think those were just those voices in my head more than anything. But there was this moment where I went to pick up my kids and I pulled up in their mom's driveway for my parenting time, and the older girls refused to come out, and they refused to come over to my house during that period of time. And that affected me a lot. But in retrospect, that decision my daughters made, for whatever drove that decision, it changed my life forever. And it really was one of the best things that happened to me over time, because I went through this, I was sitting in this place of blame and feeling like I was a victim and making excuses and, you know, feeling like, well, their mom's probably saying all these bad things about me, or, you know, they just don't understand where I'm coming from. And I had all these reasons why other people should be acting differently, or why, you know, all of these things in life are happening to me. Mm-hmm. And then I ended up having kind of this life-changing moment where I was just sitting alone in my house, staring at a mirror, and I was just mad at myself. I was talking out loud in a quiet house with just me in the mirror. And I was basically like yelling at myself and kind of ridiculing myself. And I finally just said, you know, this is not the end of my story. This cannot be how I am remembered as a father. This cannot be the end of my relationship with my daughters. And I go back to this phrase that I had heard on a podcast where they uttered this phrase, how has your leadership contributed to this result? And I internalized that and reframed that into parenting. And I asked myself in that moment, I was finally ready to kind of take ownership. And I asked myself, Rob, how has your parenting led to this fractured relationship with your daughters? And that was just this moment where my heart just kind of broke. Mm-hmm. And it forced me to realize the role that I played and the mistakes that I made in my relationship, in my marriage, and in my relationship with my daughters. But it also catalyzed this transformation in me and this change in me, where I started with taking ownership of my life. And that's kind of, that was the beginning of my growth and the beginning of me kind of heading in a different direction and moving from a place of being a victim where all of these things were happening to me to a place of being an empowered man who has full control over my future and my life. And so that was a big moment for me. And I'm sharing all that to say I'm still working on my relationship with my daughters today, but it is, they come over because they want to come over, not because they have to. Whenever I invite them, they come over. We text, you know, and stuff. But I will say that I feel like there is an opportunity to improve that relationship further. And I really, that is a real point that I am trying to focus on, you know, over these next few years, because I love them a ton and I know they love me, but I feel like, you know, that there's still room to kind of grow within that relationship.
Yeah. Yeah. So what I hear you talking about is that idea of extreme ownership, right? That idea of like, nothing is happening to me, it's happening for me. And I was just talking to somebody about this the other day, kind of talking about, and we get this a lot, right? Like when people are separating and divorcing, it's obviously a bitter time, and guys tend to get the short end of the stick when it comes to family courts and all those things. And the guy I was talking to was like, you know, she's making my life a living hell. And granted, it from the sounds of it, it sounds like a living hell, no doubt. And he isn't doing these things necessarily to himself in this moment, but there are some things that maybe, there's two sides to every story, right? There are some things leading up to this moment that maybe, you know, if we take accountability for, we're no longer the victim of, right? Like there's some things that I could have done in the past that maybe would have been better. And like you said, what have you done as a leader? What have you done as a parent, or even in that particular relationship? What had you done as a husband that kind of led to this, right? Because this is the symptom of something else, right? Like the cold is the actual issue, but the cough is killing. Like we can't take the cough. The cough is driving me crazy, but the cold is the real problem, right? And we're now looking at the cough and getting cough drops and trying to solve that problem, but that's not the real issue. The real issue is the cold, and we got to fix that. And so I think a lot of times, if we can accept ownership for all the things that are going on, it gives us the opportunity to, like you said, be empowered. I'm in control of my situation. I am the master of my fate, the captain of my soul. Like I am the one that can make this change, as opposed to, you know, crying out, why me? Right. You can kind of stand up proudly and say, you know, I'm taking this head on and I'm going to make the change myself. So that's encouraging to hear, because I know a lot of guys that I talk to and a lot of guys listen to the podcast are struggling with that, right? Struggling with, you know, taking ownership for stuff that they aren't doing. Like I'm not trying to make my life a living hell, but it's happening. And I think you can't effectively change it until you take control of why it's happening, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that we tend to focus more on the circumstances and less on the, you know, all of the things that kind of led up to that. And, you know, that was the key moment for me. I mean, that was a moment where I took ownership, and that was a moment that kind of changed things. But I also am open with sharing this story because I also want to make it clear that things aren't perfect today. Mm-hmm. I am still working on this today, but I'm doing it with intention and I'm doing it with a purpose, and I'm never going to give up on that. And, you know, that's the choice that I'm making. That is what taking ownership looks like to me in that situation. And, you know, as you mentioned, and I'm saying this for all of those other fathers out there that you were talking about, where they might have legitimate reasons for the way that they feel and legitimate circumstances. And I'm not going to go into all of that, but I had some of those too. And I get that. So I'm not saying this without understanding. I'm saying this as someone who has been through that. But the thing is all of these thoughts and all of these things that have happened to us, all of these thoughts that are going through our head, we still have a choice of what we're going to do with that. And I understand that it's really easier to say that now that I'm on the other side of it than it was when I was in the middle of it. But we have an opportunity we cannot let these kind of voices become excuses, or these circumstances that have happened to us become excuses for the way that we are behaving and the actions that we are taking moving forward. We can accept it. We can say, you know what, this is really, you know, really crummy what has happened to me, but this is what I'm going to do about it. And in spite of that, I'm going to move forward. And I will say, with my relationship with my daughters, early on, I had to make the choice that I was going to be reaching out to them And it was regardless of the response that I got.
Mm-hmm.
And the response I got wasn't great for a long time. You know, I would reach out, maybe I'd get a response, maybe I wouldn't. I'd invite them over. Sometimes they would show up, often they wouldn't. And it would have been really easy for me to just stop and kind of give up and be like, you know what, I tried. That was the best I had. And now it's on them. Well, no, that's not taking extreme ownership as you're talking about. And that's not mm-hmm. committing to that relationship and committing to them as individuals. So, I mean, I think we have to be in the mindset to be able to do this, but we need to push past the pain that we're feeling in order to be able to like really step into what that great thing is. It's on the other side of all of that pain.
Yeah. Yes. It being committed to the process, regardless of the results, right? Just doing your part, doing what you can do and doing it consistently, regardless of what comes from it, because it's like, there's like that meme or that picture out where it's like kind of cut in half, and there's two guys with pickaxes, and they're, you know, kind of digging through the dirt. And one of them is like in the picture, he's like walking away, but he's like that far away from hitting the diamonds, and the other guy is just still going, because you never know what day that's going to break, right? Like you never know when that text message is going to be the one that just, you know, breaks the wall down completely. And then they are just locked back in with you in the way that you want them to be. And it might be tomorrow. It might not be for 10 years. But if you don't keep going, you won't know when that's going to happen. You won't be able to appreciate it. The other part of that is when you stay committed to the process, even if it never happens, you can be satisfied with the fact that you gave everything you've literally gave everything you had. Right. And I think that's the beauty of hard work is hard work doesn't guarantee success. It guarantees hard work and something that you can look at and say, you know, I did everything I could. Like I left it all on the field. Regardless of what happened, I did everything that I could in that situation with everything that I had. And I think that's parenting in general, right? Because I have young kids now, and I really honestly won't know how good a job I did as a parent until they become adults, right? Like they're being a good 9-year-old is not meaningless, but she's going to be 10, and then she's going to be 11. And like every year is going to be different. And so I can kick butt as a 9-year-old's dad, but as a 10-year-old, like, am I going to be just as good? And I have to stay committed to being a good dad, no matter how old they are. And even when they're like adults, I'm still going to be parenting, right? I'm going to be kind of, it'll be different scenarios and different situations, but I'm still going to be the same father, right? And because I'm that, and because of my own mindset and mentality, I want to be the best version of me I can be. And so I'm going to be the best 28-year-old's father, whatever that means, you know? And so I think that's something that for all of us to really to stay focused on is just the process, the day-to-days of being the man and the father that we want to be. Whether that brings us the results we want or not is not up to us, right? Like we actually don't control that. We're just in control of what we can do and what we do next. I had a therapy session, like one of the first ones I went to, and this is like we're kind of dealing with some stuff in my youth, and I was telling her, you know, all these different things that are going on, and at the end of it, you know, I was kind of feeling sorry for myself. You know, you get in there and they break you down, you be crying, and you know, wiping your nose and like a real cry. And at the end of it, she looked at me and she goes, you know, that was really sad, and you know, that's really unfortunate, all the things that happened to you. And it sounds like a lot of them weren't your fault. You know, you were a kid, but you have a decision now. Is all those bad things that happened to you. You can't control that. But what you can control is what happens next. And I was like, you know, still tears in my eyes, but like it hit me like, dang, that was good. That was really good. And I try to keep that in my mind now, is that, you know, things are going to happen that are beyond our control, that we don't want to happen, that we would rather not happen. But what are we going to do next? Like, what do we do after that? After that thing has happened is what's important. How do we bounce back from it?
Yeah, absolutely. That's great advice for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. It's something that I think about all the time, right? Like every day, like, cause on the, like, I try to, like, I've been trying to do journaling and trying to, like, at the end of the day, kind of take notes on what's happened that day. And some days, like anybody else, are better than others. Like you mentioned earlier in this is, you know, I got a fatherhood podcast and I coach fathers and I'm doing all this stuff for fathers. Doesn't mean that I'm a perfect one, right? It doesn't mean that I'm doing a great job all the time, right? There's some days when I look back and I'm like, dang, I suck today. Like I lost my temper. I wasn't as, you know, I wasn't as comforting as maybe I should have been in that moment, or dang, was I too tough on her? You know, I've got all these things and I'm taking notes at the end of the day. And it's like, you know, today sucked. Didn't do as good a job as I wanted to as a father. But the bright side is, if the Lord willing wakes me up tomorrow, I got another opportunity. Right. And I can get 1% better than I was yesterday. Right. And that's kind of my competition with myself, is like day to day. You know, if I look back at my journal and I go, you know, December 17th, 2023 versus today, am I better? And that's how I kind of can kind of gauge it, because like I said, I won't know for sure until they're adults.
Yeah. Yeah. You are, I won't go off on too big of a tangent, but you're reminding me of a book that I'm actually in the middle of reading right now called The Gap and the Gain. I don't know if you're familiar with that, but
no,
it is basically talking about measuring your success based on your progress versus how far you are away from your goal. And, you know, it's kind of that idea that as long as you are heading, the most successful people tend to keep heading in a positive direction. That it's not about like crushing that goal exactly in the time frame that you wanted, or, you know, reaching every goal perfectly. It's about how much better are you right now than where you were previously. And so if mm-hmm. if you choose to measure the gain instead of the gap, it just creates this different attitude in you, and it keeps you motivated to keep moving forward.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that's an important part. And you mentioned something else I want to go back to, but I think that's an important thing that we have to think about or remember as fathers and as just men, just human beings in general, is sometimes we do have to stop and appreciate how far we've come. Right. Because we kind of live this life of striving, of always, you know, pushing forward, and, you know, guys are struggling, and, it, you know, it's always a keep going, guys, or keep struggling, or keep, you know, keep pushing forward. But if we can look back at where we were to where we are right now, that might be the motivation to keep moving forward. Like, man, look how far I've come. And that reminds me of I don't know if you've got younger girls, so maybe you've seen it. Moana. Where she's like, they're talking about the line where the sky meets the sea, the horizon, right? It like, it calls you and you're kind of always moving towards it. And as long as you're facing forward, you don't really realize that you've made so much progress. Because if you keep going, the horizon is just going to stay. It's going to stay there. You don't get any closer to the horizon. You just continue going and the horizon is just as far as it was when you started. But if you stop the ship for a minute and you turn around and look back, you see how far away from the shore you are. It gives you some appreciation for the amount of work that you've done and some motivation to continue working towards it.
Yeah, for sure.
So the gap in the gain, like who is that by?
I knew you were going to ask me, and I wasn't necessarily planning on sharing that. And I don't remember off the top of my head.
That's quite all right. We can Google it. That's the beautiful part of being in 2024 is we just Google it and we'll find it. And I'll add it to the show notes or something, because I'm going to check it out for sure.
It's a good one. And I have seen Moana, so my kids are older, but yes, we've still seen all those movies.
Good. So, you know what? This has been a refreshing conversation, because not only, you know, am I learning a little bit more about the single father and solo father idea that, you know, situation that I didn't know before. I'm sure there are guys who are listening who are in that, you know, in those shoes and can learn from you and what you've done and what you're doing. I do have a question for you that, you know, I typically don't have a lot of questions, but I do have a question that I always ask, and I'm sure the guys are waiting to hear. As someone who is a, you know, the single father coach and who is a single father to five, What does fatherhood mean to you?
Yeah, so fatherhood to me means responsibility. Mm. That's what I think of when I think of fatherhood, but not maybe how a lot of people think of the word responsibility. But I feel blessed to be a father. I feel that being the father of five daughters is a gift that's been given to me, and I have a responsibility to take care of that gift and mm-hmm. to do my best and put my all into that. And so it's a responsibility to provide and to instruct and to connect and to just ensure that these girls that have been that God has blessed me with, that they are taken well care of and left off better than they would be otherwise.
Yeah, I love that, man. I heard somebody before kind of tell a story of a farmer getting seeds, right? And it's like, as a father, you're kind of like the farmer. You get these seeds and it's your job to tend the soil. It's your job to make sure they get enough water. It's your job to make sure they get enough sunlight, fertilizer. You know, as they start to grow, it's your job to prune them so they grow the correct way. It's your job to nurture them until they can become fruitful. And in that way, you know, fatherhood and farming are very similar. But I agree with you. It is a responsibility that is very different than just being a man, because you have responsibilities as a man, but they're not the same as those responsibilities as a father, right? You're only responsible for yourself as a man. Make sure that you're doing the right things and not, you know, putting yourself in harm's way. But it's a different level when you become a father. It is so much more to it. And so I wholeheartedly agree that responsibility is fatherhood. So if we were able to kind of get all the guys in one room, like all the dads, single dads, solo dads, dads that are they're co-parenting or parenting with their spouse, like every dad, if we can get them all in the room, and we get you a mic and a stage, but you can only say one phrase or word. You can only say one thing to them. What is the message that you want them to hear?
One phrase or one word, huh? That's a tough one.
It could be longer. It could be longer. But just understand that they're dads and they're busy. They don't have a whole lot of time. So you got to hit them quick.
Yeah. You know, I would ask them a question. Mm-hmm. I would ask them, what kind of man do you want to be? What kind of father do you want to be? Because I think that we often get stuck in this place where we are outward focused instead of inward focused. And, you know, I think sometimes it's just as simple. That was the question I asked myself when I was staring into the mirror. I asked myself what kind of man and father I wanted to be, because we all have the opportunity to become that man and become that father. But we need to be intentional with our choices moving forward, and we need to be committed to becoming that type of man and that type of father.
I like that. You know what? That's the first time someone's asked a question in that position. And I think that definitely puts a lot of responsibility on the gentleman that you're talking to. But then, as you mentioned, it's an internal thing, right? I think a lot of times we talk about how we show up in the world, and how we're focused on that outward experience or how the world experiences us. But in reality, the better things are on the inside, the better they show up on the outside. And so I love that you asked the question there, and that's really good. I like that. Cause that's something I got to ask myself. Right. And I ask myself often is who or what kind of man do I want to be? And that helps as like a guiding principle or guiding light for me. Okay. You hit that one out of the park. You know what? We'll bring you back and we'll get you another room, a little more intimate, smaller setting. The crowd isn't as big, but just as important, or actually maybe more important, not even maybe, definitely more important. And in this room, there's a smaller stage and you've got a handheld mic. It's just your kids. What do you want them to hear?
Wow. So this question is so much more personal, but I will say that I honestly this feels like a cop-out, but I honestly feel that I have shared with my kids the things that I want them to hear. So I guess the only thing that I would say in that moment is thank you. Because I feel that I am in the place that I am at, and my family is in the place that we are at, only partially due to the things that I have done. But the other piece is their willingness to buy into those ideas and their commitment and, you know, all of the things that they have taught me during this process as well. And so I would say thank you. Thank you for being the people that you are. Thank you for being transparent. Thank you for being authentic. Thank you for being advocates for people who have less than you and for people who are being picked on. Thank you for being the people that you are. Thank you.
I love that, man. That's not a cop out at all. I think being thankful or showing gratitude is one of the best things that you can do. It like accepting ownership of things that happen to you is empowering. Right. It definitely sets you up to be better off in the long run. And so having that gratitude and thanking them for being the people that they are and for helping you become the man that you are is just as important as telling them how much you love them. And I think because you've done that and you would tell them thank you, I think that means that you're doing all the things right. Right. Or doing all, not always right, but doing all the things with the right intentions the right way. Right. So, hey, man, that's you're batting 1,000 right now. You're batting 1,000.
We should stop the questions now then, probably.
Yeah, this is a good point. This is a good point to stop. You know what? If guys, speaking of questions, if guys have questions or you know, they're wanting to reach out to you, what would be the best way for them to do that?
I think the easiest way to get a hold of me is to check out my podcast, which is called The Business of Being Dad. I release episodes every Tuesday, and it is on all of the streaming platforms. But if you go to the description of any of the episodes, there are links to be able to check out my website or to send me an email or to get into contact with me a variety of ways. So I would love it if you checked it out, and I would love to hear from you.
There you go, fellas. So I'm sure there's going to be questions, right? I'm sure that guys are wanting to get to know a little bit more about the program, you know, single father mastery, and kind of figuring out how they can become the best single father they are. But even for you guys that are not single fathers, I think there's something to be gained there. I think the more resources in fatherhood we have, the better equipped we are. It's like a toolbox, right? The more tools we have, the more effective we can be as leaders, as builders, as men, and as fathers. So make sure you check out the podcast. Make sure you reach out. If nothing else, just say, hey, you know, I heard you on, you know, the 4-5 Fatherhood podcast. Just wanted to reach out and say, I loved it. Thank you for sharing all that good stuff, right? Before we go, did you have anything you want to leave the fellas with? That was a question, but it wasn't intentional. You can, you've already left more than enough value. So if you want to tap out on that one, you can.
No, I appreciate it. I just want to thank you, Rod. I really enjoyed this conversation, and I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you and your audience.
Yeah, thank you. As always, I'm always really appreciative of guys taking the time out of their life because I understand how valuable time is. So I appreciate you taking the time out of your day to spend some time with us, to share your story and to share your mission, and as well to just kind of help encourage and support fathers and fatherhood. I think the more we get doing that, the better the world can be. Because there's better men and better fathers leading us. So thank you again, man. I really appreciate it. And we'll talk to you soon.
Sounds great. Thank you.
All right.